Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi friends, it's Chris. Did you know that Rollsecast just got nominated by the Australian Podcast Awards for Best Fiction of 2021? I know, that's amazing, right? Along with that, we also got nominated as part of the Listener's Choice Award. And guess what? You're a listener! That's right, I know you've been looking forward to this moment your entire life. Now, as a listener, you get to go to AustralianPodcastAward.com and go to the Listener's Choice Awards section where you can vote for us. And if we win, we'll do something dumb. Like, I don't know, eat a bag of lollies. I shouldn't be doing that. I've been looking after my sugar levels and I can't eat a bag of lollies, but I'll do it. Anyway, if you want to support my lolly habit, go to patreon.com/baybeard, where for as little as $7 Australian or $5 American, you can join and be part of a special secret section for Discord. I know, all of this is blowing your mind, and there's so much more of Rollsecast to come, so don't let me keep you. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome, everybody, to a fantastic episode and the finale of Kids on Bikes, a Mystery Down Under, Woo! Where we get to talk about everything that just happened.
Yeah.
It was a lot. I, of course, am Ellen, and I've been the GM for this season. Let's throw it around to Sean.
Ooh, I was Sean and still am Sean, and for this season I played Dickie Morse.
Very nice.
Hi, I'm Chris. I played Eric.
Hey, I'm Phil. And I played Jono.
Jono Smith.
Jono Smith.
And what's your last name, Phil?
Harker Smith.
Yeah, so I think we can start right off the bat there. Oopsie doopsie.
What's wrong with that? I'm just playing myself.
No.
I remember recording the intro where Ellen has to say, and this, as this person. And I went, it's Smith twice.
Yeah, I go to say, and Phil Harker Smith playing Jono Smith. And it just really took the wind out of my sails. It's just one of those things that you don't notice until you notice it, and then you can't not notice it.
Look, it's just because I'm a terrible actor and I couldn't remember, like, it, you know, if it wasn't my own name, I wouldn't know to respond.
Right. Yeah. That is, but I will say that's tacitly not true because you all did fantastic work performing this season.
So if people are new to this episode, if they've only joined us for Kids on Bikes, what can they expect from this episode?
Well, probably a lot of stuff they're not going to understand because this is relation to our whole season of what we've just performed.
What went wrong, what went well, behind the scenes stuff and the questions and from the fans, as it were.
That's right.
That the GM can answer, and also questions from us.
Yeah.
And vice versa from Ellen to us.
I mean, if they were listening to Roll to Cast specifically for Kids on Bikes, and this was the first time they'd encountered a postseason show.
Just jumping in at the postseason.
I thought you meant
maniacs, if that's the case.
It's a very strange way of listening to it in reverse order.
Yes.
Do you have a little plan for what we're going to cover?
God, no. They're very similar to how I played the game.
Hell yeah.
So, let me turn it on you then.
This is your debut. Ellen's first time.
This is your debut.
What, it is.
How do you feel? How do you feel to get one under your belt?
I feel very... Well, it's already done, but I still feel very nervous about it. I think I put a lot of effort into... Somewhat counterintuitively, you might say, because Kids on Bikes is a very yes and improv heavy game that requires the whole kind of all the players adding into the story and building the world as you kind of go. I did not really feel confident to do that, so I did a whole bunch of prep work.
Oh, that was pages upon pages.
Pages upon pages as well. I really wanted to tell a specific story. And I love Australiana and Australian stories because I think we have a pretty varied kind of cultural landscape. Our natural life is so wonderful and strange, and there's just a beautiful eeriness and excitement to Australia, and I really wanted to explore that, and I thought that would fit in nice with this kind of Steven Spielberg kids adventure genre.
It's also the very first Australian... No, that's not true.
No, but
it's the very first, like, kind of like we really hearken into the Australian, as you said, Australiana, right? It's the first time we really like, hey, we're Australian podcasters. Yeah. Here's an Australian story.
With the exception of you in Vampire Season 2, Sean.
Going full locker. I felt incredibly nervous to do it. I still feel nervous. I'm very proud of all the work that you all did and that you all like stepped into it with such gusto. I think if I could do it all over, I would probably just give you all like more fun. Like I'd probably allow you to have more input into Ground Zero than I actually did, because Warrawirin was kind of my invention. Obviously, you all added embellishments and your own lovely rumors and your own NPCs and your own families and all that kind of things. But I'd be really interested into playing Kids on Bikes with you all as it kind of should be, which is what town are we playing? Go, Chris. All right.
Dingus.
What's the main export of this town? Go,
Dongus.
Phil.
I understand the instinct, and I think that that'll be gooder. It's
did you say gooder?
Gooder.
I know. There's a random hesitation
back
noise.
Back off, everybody.
Slow down. The brakes. I think that would work really well around a casual table. I think something like us recording a season where you have to kind of fit it all together does require a level of kind of curation of those details.
Mm.
You're wrong.
It is something that we don't talk about a lot, is that a lot of these games, because obviously the whole ethos is of the show is that we're playing a lot of games that people may not have heard of before.
Yeah.
Like we stray away from D&D, which has come right into the public mainstream. But the weird thing is that a lot of these games, we haven't gone back and played casually, right? Like we played them for a season in this podcast context. I haven't revisited Pulp. I almost did. Haven't revisited Kids on Bikes or Vampire. I have just started to because a few of us do streaming. But a lot of us kind of play these games and then put them down and haven't returned to them. So we have like a unique relationship to a lot of these games.
We like to tell a very specific story. And I think the genre dictated what kind of story I was interested in telling, something that is a bit eerie, but also a bit fun and silly, because I feel like that's where my strengths are.
But it's also the contrast that's so well highlighted by the Australian setting, right? That the landscape is quite majestic and eerie, but the Australian character and the social character is quite jubilant.
It's a larrikin.
It's quite flippant.
Quite irreverent.
Irreverent. Yeah.
My favorite addition or my favorite idea was the idea of the Christ Cup for the Warrawirin Surfing Championship,
that's right.
Because it was like you were nailed onto a surfing board. And I just thought that might be the smartest thing I've ever thought of and done in my life. And I really peaked way too early in this season.
I do have like an opening question in regards to the inception of the idea.
Yes.
I know for... We'll have different, because now we've all been in the DM or GM or storyteller's chair, what have you. We all have different ways of approaching the season. For Ellen, you had something that was completely unique heretofore in Roll to Cast, which is you did the goddamn season before with another, you had a playtest group.
Yeah.
You went through almost the entire game
with that
group. And my question is, how did it differ between our podcasting group, your first love,
right?
And the group you played with,
yeah. Now,
and if
boys.
If the group you played with are listening, did we do it better?
Zola, Max, and Stan. We can name
sure.
names.
Sure, okay.
And if they're listening,
they better rate us 5 stars on iTunes podcast.
Now, boys, don't be jealous. I love both my groups equally. it was interesting because I, as well, adding to that new time GM. Oh my god, my first GM experience is going to be broadcast forever in perpetuity until long after I am dead, hopefully. Who's paying the hosting costs? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
YouTube, your daughter.
Thank you. Yeah, my fictional daughter. So I wanted to get a group of people that I was very felt very safe with, and I knew I could definitely bounce ideas off of, and they were all people I went to acting school with. And they had a very different dynamic right off the bat because we had two siblings who were twins, very different in kind of personalities. We had one who was a chatterbox and a bit of a mouth, and then we had one who was a bit of a, you know, didn't like to talk to people, very go off, do her own thing. So we had the two twins who were quite young, and that matched up nicely because, Dickie, you kind of ended up being this mouthy character.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you slotted in nicely to where he kind of explored because he had a crush on Brianna. And then in our story, Brianna was kind of a bit fond on you because of the similar age. In their playthrough, their dynamic was the two kids and one teen, which made for a very Steve from Stranger Things, like Steve Harrington season
around,
2.
Yeah,
where he's kind of like a bit beleaguered, but also he still really cares for these kids, which was just very funny. And there were some interesting parallels. So he had a somewhat not frosty relationship with his father, but he was kind of a teen rebel. And then when he went to the mine to talk to his dad kind of had this big heart to heart with him. So there were interesting parallels where it all matched up. But
did you change the plotting much? Did you change any of the plot points
between
the two?
I added in rumors that you guys added in, obviously. They became NPCs in this world because I thought that was a nice way to honor them.
Yeah. I was going to say, Max was the teen that we all hated
at
the beach.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you didn't really hang out with Reed or Jules, the two twins, but Jason Pennington.
Fucking Jason.
Yeah,
Jason, man.
Was the rich teenager that
with a name like Pennington.
Hated
Was that his last name? Pennington. God.
Let me check, that's but disgusting. I'm fairly sure it was Pennington.
Pretty sure it was Jason Pennington,
Nice, what was it? Nice Walkman.
Because you got something
it off him.
Jason Pennington, 17, student layabout.
What a dick.
Got him.
But yeah, I was just, I played with a friend of mine, Zola, who is very yes and she would just constantly be exploring things. She wanted to, she broke into Keith's house. And I was
why would you do that?
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, oh, fuck, now I've got to think of a whole fucking thing that you can discover. Because my play style was, because it is so yes and, whatever the direction you kind of went in, I would try and build around on the fly.
Yeah, you lay clues in front of wherever the people decide to go.
I definitely had ideas for what kind of clues they would be. And so part of my anxiety, I think, was constantly thinking how I was going to place them. You know, if I had three different ideas of clues and you wanted to go to the abandoned house, what clue would I place there and why?
Yeah.
So I had a whole kind of cachet.
It's like a very malleable Cluedo.
Yes, exactly.
For me, that speaks to some of the sort of the illusion of choice sometimes that you have to play around with as a GM, where you can say, yeah, you go wherever you want, But you kind of have to, you have to make decisions about what's there. Like, wherever they go, they have to still find the same things.
For, yes.
For the narrative to come together in a meaningful way.
Like, imagine if you just like, yeah, you go to the abandoned house.
It's nothing there.
Yeah. There's cool.
And I felt like I wanted to leave quite a lot, but make them all, make some of the clues have different interpretations.
Yeah. And I think as long as it always pushes you towards the mine, right?
Yes.
That's the kind of secret, right? Is it has to push you towards the conclusion.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter so much how much you get there, like how you get there. That can be kind of free form as long as you get to that big set piece, right?
Yeah.
And that, it was a pretty epic set piece.
So, speaking
of like how we get there, yes. I think this is a good segue into our first question. Because a lot of these questions that we get from our fans have like a chronological tint to them.
Yeah.
So let's start at the very beginning. From
why Briel?
This is from the Over Archiver or Juliana, and it's for Ellen.
Where's this question coming from, Sean?
This is coming from Twitter, Chris.
Oh, excellent.
Follow us at Babybeard Media.
Where'd you get the idea for the plot, and how much did the players explore or deviate from what you had planned? And then I'll do the secondary part afterwards.
Yeah. I know the secondary part, so. Yes. I actually went and so I think I had the idea of always setting it in Australia because I just thought that was an interesting place to do it. It's a creepy place. I love Australian mysteries. And I thought, well, Kids on Bikes means that you have to set it in an era before smartphones are readily available.
That's right. It's in the book, isn't it? Yeah.
And I have it in a town that is small enough to kind of ride bicycle to bicycle. And it just reminded me a lot of stories I heard when I was growing up because my dad and his family lived in a very rural country town and obviously grew up in the 70s. My father grew up in the 70s. So what I did is I went to my grandfather, Bernard Graham, and I asked him all of the weird stories from when he lived in a country town in Australia. I've actually got some of the notes here. And I just asked him for all the weird shit and all the spooky rumors and all the mysteries, because when I was reading Kids on Bikes, that idea of rumors to the town and spooky areas and nefarious things just really intrigued me. So I went and I asked him, and honestly, very fun thing to do, to ask your grandparents all the fucked up shit that they heard about when they were kids.
At which point did he come up with the mirror dimension?
Yeah, so that was when he tried acid. No, I'm kidding. But he worked in a mine, and so did my father, for most of their life. And so that tied really nicely into the themes of kind of profiting off the land and exploitation that I wanted to tell. But yeah, he gave me some great shit. The camel story that I tell where, you know, the idea is that the police station in the town is so small because it's really just one police officer, that at one point they had a camel as evidence for a murder tied up out the front.
Great.
That was a real story.
Okay.
That really happened in Lee Creek in South Australia. He also told me that there was a deserted house that was the rumor is that the whole family died of tuberculosis. Just all these great, great stories. And I'm like, okay, Bernie, slow your roll. There's too much great shit. Gonna write
just
all
do
this
your,
down.
Do your voiceover, Bernie, okay?
Come on. Just come back and do a voiceover for us. Thank you very much.
And did we take the story off the rails, or did we kind of much follow what you expected of us?
Hard to say if there were rails. You definitely threw me a lot of like loops, but you also threw me a lot of delicious gifts.
Yeah.
So because you're all much more proficient role players than I, there were moments where and just because the tone then at the table had become so yes and or what about this or blah, 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 that then you would kind of be surreptitiously dropping hints or like, oh, what if it was like that? I'm like, no, I'm going to steal that and yeah, do that. I did not expect you to kill
all of them.
All of them. I mean, I expected you to kind of maybe do a Disney death on them. But breaking someone's face was quite...
Chucking him into a pit, eviscerating them with a big monster.
Yeah, it was quite unexpected.
That was the monster did it. Yeah. It wasn't Dickie.
No, not Dickie's fault.
I mean, he controlled it with his mind, but yeah.
In my head, he asked him and the monster had its own volition. But I did still take two psychotomies.
I mean, they tortured children.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Evil. Yeah. They're Stephen King villains of oh my God, you're terrible people.
I think the era of movies that this kind of is based on often have quite kind of dark episodes to them.
100%.
Yeah. They're not quite so. I mean, they're like Stranger Things, which. If you listen to the interview next week, there's a very direct response.
Yeah.
Kids on Bikes is a very direct response to Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
Which obviously is itself a response to Stephen King and Spielberg and stuff. But that is, Stranger Things has some really brutal, gruesome deaths.
Bob.
Yeah. Bob, yeah. And Samwise Gamgee as well.
The Goonies. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Somehow hobbits come in. It's really wild in whatever season that is.
Yeah, so it doesn't feel... For me, it doesn't feel too out of... tone to
no.
do that at the end.
And I think I expected it, but it was also I was probably not ready for Eric to charge the cop per se. Like I kind of did expect it, but I just am not that confident in a combat scenario. And also Kids on Bikes is not a combat heavy game, and just my weak points are spatially trying to figure out spatially where everyone is.
I am right there with you. That was my season.
And I was just like, everyone's going to be frustrated, but I just don't understand where people are a lot of the time without a diagram. So that's on me. But yeah, I don't know. You're all, like I said, you're definitely exploring different avenues, but you're also throwing me lifelines every time you did it. So yes and no.
Yeah, okay.
There's also the second part of the question which we can open up to everyone here, which is, for all, how great / terrible a name was Briel?
Yes, that's my answer.
Chris, you literally have a response. Your eyes are twinkling.
Chris definitely has a response. It's a Bruin. Come on, Chris. Now's the time.
Come on.
I hate saying this.
Oh, he likes it.
It's grown on me.
Yes!
It's growing on me. It's. I think like E.T., when you hear it the first time, you're like, that's actually dumb. Briel. That's foolish. And then you're like, nah, I track it. I get it.
Yeah.
I get behind it.
It's funny because the whole reason for the name was, well, first of all, it's because a 10-year-old said it. But secondly, because that was Dickie / Sean's idea that Briel was Brie.
Yeah, had been had like consciousness eel. Had been put
yeah.
in.
It's like, Brie's an eel. Briel.
It's a portmanteau.
Then when we found Briel, I was like, oh damn.
But by then it had already stuck. But that's kind of nice. The stories like that have, you know, red herrings or cul-de-sacs where they don't figure it out instantly. They think it's one thing. Oh, no, it's not. And I think that added to it a lot.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
It's still fucking hilarious.
I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, you can hear my reaction in the show where I basically crack up instantly, because for me it just hits that sweet spot of like, it's kind of naff but it's perfect.
Yeah,
like it's so bad it's good.
I can't remember it's in Stranger charming. Things doesn't Dustin name the baby something silly?
Yeah,
it's a very kid thing to do.
Yeah,
and we totally rolled
with
it. I have a question for all of y'all.
Ooh.
What for you was the most exciting payoff or uncovering of the mystery? Because obviously you all got to add your own rumors and certain things in there, but a lot of things unfurled throughout the series.
Ooh.
I really like the Leviathan. I think it's such a kind of scale of a creature.
Mm.
And to find out that that both Briel and the other small creature, they're all kind of like fragments of a whole, kind of expands the scope of it in this really great way, that kind of mirrors the growing of Briel through the season. So Briel itself kind of grows, gets legs, becomes more and more of a creature, and you're like, what is this thing? Where does it come from? Why is it like this? Why does it constantly morph? Why does it have aspects of these different creatures? And then you see the Leviathan, which is like quite literally opalescent, like it's a bit of everything all mashed together, you know, a prism of different creatures and ideas and forms. And the very fact that it fills a whole mind, that it's just, it's this, it blows my mind. The scale of it really blows my mind. And for me, that was really, I didn't expect it to get to that kind of scale.
Yes.
Right. And for me, that was like really mind blowing and just trying to imagine it, this colossal creature under a weird sky. For me, that was just, it was a great culmination. That's what I really liked. Yeah.
I think for myself, this is taking your question and skewing it a little bit. Yes, it's more a payoff in terms of like what a GM will gift you in terms of rolling with things, is that when you give them a choice and the role per se is almost astronomical, it's very unlikely that you'll succeed on it. But it's like, no, if you get it, we'll reward you with something. So the computer scene is one of my favorites because, like, clearly, I would presume you didn't expect Dickie to make that role.
No.
It was quite massive.
I really didn't.
It was like 17?
Oh, a bit more than that. I can't remember. It's something like that, yeah. But it was
I think it was 17. So you could only get it on a D20. Yeah.
And then once that occurred, you still had to guess the passwords. And for those listening, absolutely was not fudged in terms of like,
no.
Oh yes, you got the password. No, like I remember you told me that minute when I cracked in the computer, you came up with some words in your head of what those were going to be, and I hit it. And there's just that euphoria that comes from, like, it's yes anding, but it's also paying off somebody paying attention and giving them something.
There's a great comment, I can't remember if it's from Doug or Jonathan, where they were talking about, In a lot of games, dice explode maybe once, you know, or there's a cap on kind of explosions of dice. But I think it was Jonathan who was like, why don't the dice just keep exploding? Like, but it's very emblematic of that genre where the kid who is not very brawny suddenly at the end is able to lift up a car. You know, there are moments for characters who are not really that strong in that certain thing to kind of prevail due to luck and kind of will and all that kind of doodah.
Yeah. Mm.
Chris, did you have a
payoff? My favorite payoff is the school.
Mm, like just all the...
The kind of the fucked like office.
Yeah.
Mm. I really enjoyed that moment, especially. I think it set the tone going forward. It's the first time we hear explicitly about how horrible the experiments are.
Mm.
And as someone who loves their grit and their grime, I'm a big fan of that.
And their formaldehyde whatever
it
is.
It does mark a turning point, doesn't
it?
Yeah.
It's the beginning of the crisis. It's the, you know, if we've already gone through the instigating action, we've been in the cave, we've you know, Gabriel, we're on track.
Brianna's missing.
Yeah. We are now in crisis mode where things are bad.
And this is the first kind of like morsel of the why.
Yeah.
The why everything is happening.
Yeah, we're establishing a villain. We're establishing kind of stakes and more than just one person missing, but it's a greater sense of that.
Mm.
And I really enjoyed the atmosphere in that space. I like, because it's an old church that's converted into a school. I like that you implemented both instances of authority. Those are very traditional... Western archetypes of authority and power, and you know, being the villain's a man, they're very patriarchal institutes as well. So I thought that was a really nice moment in going, here's your this know your enemy. This is it.
Yeah,
it's an institution, and it was big business.
It
right?
was the three biggest institutions that are very patriarchal and very. You know, very white, very cis. And it was the thing, for me, it was the nice payoff of how I was designing the monsters in that the monsters are the good ones, you know.
Yeah.
The men in the town are the monsters.
Yes.
These three kind of the trio, the triumvirate of Warrawirran, of Bob.
Yeah, this Bob might be my favorite.
Bill Woolley. And Keith Thompson.
Yeah.
It's not... Yeah. I did a bad there.
And Bill Smith.
And Bill Smith.
Bill Smith,
fuck me. That the things that were unknown and, you know, eerie and unusual were actually the things that were, your friends and
and that we're being taken advantage of.
Exactly, and wanted to protect you in the end. And so that was kind of my philosophy with designing Briel. Not that I called it Briel. You know what? Actually, that's another parallel. In the test game, they named it something stupid too.
Great.
I think they named it something like John. I don't know. It was something equally stupid.
Ours is better.
Yeah,
Briel is better.
It's a thing that kids do, isn't it?
Yeah. But yeah, and that was how I, because the superpowered character in Kids on Bikes is a bit vague of how you can go about it. But my idea was that the more kind you were to Briel, the more aspects you would get.
The more powerful it would
be. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It fed on kindness.
Yeah, and
sweet.
Vegemite.
We'll
and
jump Vegemite. Into the second question from Juliana. One more for all. What was one detail, bracket, character traits, backstory, plot threads, etc., end bracket, you wanted to explore but never got to?
Oh, that is a very good one because there are a lot.
There was definitely something like I got to explore it quite a lot at the beginning, but the relationship with Jono and his sister Isabella and him being that young provider, it was kind of set up at the beginning, and that's really nice, but it would have been cool to have it be a bit more active, like a way to protect her or something. I don't see where it fits, but it was something about him that I really liked when I was creating him.
Yeah.
That like it wasn't like he was abandoned to look after his sister. It's just like they were just, the family's just spread really thin, and so he kind of was stepping up, and I wanted to bring that out a bit more for him. And the other thing is I kind of laid in some things that he was maybe a little bit ADHD like me, so yeah, that's why he was like restless and got into kind of trouble and stuff like that, but you know, was generally a good person, and that didn't really come out, but that's fine as well.
I think it's hard as well with in regards to Isabella, in that a responsible kid will absolutely not bring their kid sister along. No. So it's kind of it's the thing of having her in would be slightly counterintuitive to the character reacting in a
danger.
Yeah. But I did really love the whole world building you did with making your family, with making the Smiths.
I like all the characters. Yeah. Yeah, great. So have really interesting, realistic family lives. Yeah.
Chris?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Eric was gay.
Uh-huh.
I tried to code it as much as possible in there, but it didn't come out explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been cool to have like a guy kiss scene.
Was he sweet on anyone? Was he sweet on?
Yeah.
Sweet on Jono.
Yeah.
Hey.
I did get a very intense
I was aiming for homoerotic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did
get a very sweet vibe, but.
Yeah, that was me as a bisexual trying to put myself in.
Yeah.
I think Jono's just oblivious at this point. Yeah, too young to know.
Eric's probably his relationship with his father. It was touched on early, but I think I used it a little bit in that most of the male patriarchs who were the antagonists became kind of stand-ins
representative.
Father.
Yeah.
So that was useful, and that played into it. But I would have liked to have a I don't know, maybe a makeout scene in the school.
Yeah.
School church scene.
I definitely
or like a pining kind of like
I know that you say, you know, it wasn't explicit, but I definitely did get a very strong relationship from the two. I think I never try and read romantic relationships into characters that are, you know, teenage or kids. just, I don't know. I always am like, what? They don't understand. Of course kids do. They have senses of romance unless they're aromantic. But
so speaking of romantic, mine would have been interesting to see just like another scene or two or follow up with Bree and Dickie.
Yeah.
Just
she totes had a crush on you.
Yeah,
man.
She totes did. Yes, right. And it would have been just very cute to see where that would have gone. But of course, you know, she had to go so that the plot could commence. And that's fine. I've made peace with that.
Have you?
No. Dickie has. Sean has.
Okay, there we go.
And the second one was just one of those instances where I go, this is just a backstory thing. If it gets used, great. If it doesn't, fine.
Are you going to say it?
No, not yet. Okay. Not that. This is a different bit. Where I mention his dad. Dickie's dad has like gone missing somewhere, and I was like, this is just a thing of if it does come into the plot, awesome. If not, it's fine. I'm not angry about it, but it would have been interesting to see where could have Dickie's dad weirdly come into the plot.
Yes.
Was he in the mirror world, or who knows?
I think it's kind of there's something really tragic about Dickie that he has this fantasy that he's got this really epic reason for going missing. And the reality it doesn't really matter what the reality is, but it's most likely a lot more sordid than that.
That's exactly right.
It's a lot
right.
more grounded. And the tragedy is no one being able to just go like, yeah, Dickie, your dad's
Your dad
run
just
off
left
with,
your mum.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Your dad's off, a deadbeat, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, man.
Yeah.
He's got a new family up the top end, so I'm really sorry.
He's gone to Nimbin.
Yeah.
To our international listeners, the top end is the top end of Australia.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris.
And Nimbin is the stoner town.
Yeah, Nimbin is where you have all the festivals.
It's effectively legalized weed over there, which is not legal here in Australia yet, maybe. No. Who knows?
We did mention Nimbin at some point as well.
Yeah, we did. I can't remember where, but we did.
It might have been in the episode zero.
Or it could have. I think it came up in game, but probably in reference to teens and the idea that, you know, probably in reference to Kate being missing and the idea that some people just move out of Warrawirrin because they can't hack it. They want to move to the big city and, you know, that kind of very conservative town thing of, oh, they just, you know.
Yeah, mixed in with town pride. Yeah, it's a hard thing to navigate
it
that.
Is.
We do have another question.
I love questions.
Yes. Keep them coming.
This comes from Aramithius. Aramithius, who posted this on... So, we're part of the Robots Radio Network. And so, our show, Roll to Cast, has a Discord there. And so, this was posted on the Roll to Cast Discord of the Robots Radio Network. Aramithius says, I may need to re-listen to that last episode, but I didn't get a sense of what actually happened to Brianna at the end. Everything got tied up with Briel and Dickie's farewell to E.T. moment, and I didn't register whether Brianna was actually de-opalized or not. Ellen, illuminate.
Ooh, illuminate.
I said that bit. I editorialized, sorry.
Well, that's very good, though.
Thank you.
Well,
defenestrate.
Yes, I can understand why that would be hard to keep track of. Honestly, in that whole climax, I was finding it hard to keep track of
There's a lot of us.
Where everyone... was because not only did we have our three player characters, we had Kate, we had Brianna, we had Levi, we had Briel. The Leviathan was pretty much in the pit, so that's fine for now. But
and then also the antagonist as well.
And then we had the antagonist, and it was a lot.
Good job.
No.
Sorry, I tried to catch a mosquito mid-air with
just
my hand.
We all stopped to watch Ellen do it. And then we all commentated on, no, you didn't do it.
You didn't
do it. This is what Australians do for fun.
Yeah.
All of that's going on the cutting room
floor.
You think that.
Yeah. So there is a lot. But as Phil was kind of talking about it before we came in to record this, we do a bit of a roll call of everyone is running up the stairs. Like, we are all clearing the area safely to get out of the mine before this kind of dimension collapses. And we do mention Brianna.
And we do mention that someone asks, like, is Kate's... I think Sean asked how Kate is doing, like whether the opalization is like receding.
You asked that. Yeah, don't lump that onto me, sir.
Sorry, I was the insightful one.
Some guy who's super cool.
Insightful. Yeah, so I asked. I don't know why I thought it was you. I asked that and you say how it's receding and it's kind of fading. So I don't know. I kind of figure that's maybe what's going to happen with Brianna, but it's not explicit.
It's not explicit. Ooh, maybe we could do season two.
Ew.
In my mind, the idea is that Levi and Briel need to go. The connection needs to be severed so that the other dimension, so that the natural world can try and heal. Mm. And that tie would slowly fade,
yeah,
because obviously it was a bond. This kind of psychic bond to the children, yeah, was instigated and controlled by the patriarchs of the town in the children. And so now that Brianna is separated from Levi, that would kind of slowly fade.
I like the first time that Brie gets reunited with her mum, she's still got that ethereal voice. Hi. So, oh my God, what happened? It's puberty.
You shine a light on her and it just like casts
blood
shadows on behind her.
Oh my God, she could like, you know, chew gum and swallow it and you see it like head down the esophagus.
She's like your own Strepsil ad.
So I have a follow-up question.
Yes.
So I understand that they're using the creature's power to like create iron ore in our dimension so they can keep the mine going.
Yeah.
What is their end goal with what they're doing to the kids? Is it just literally just working out what the hell they can do with the power and they're just trying things out? Obviously, mind control has its own rewards, right? Mm. But was there a more, did you think of like a more kind of focused goal for them, or was it meant to be left to our imagination?
It was kind of meant to be left to your imaginations. Yeah, that's cool. Also feed in with the history and kind of setting that at this time there is conscription for the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Whether the town is trying to, you know, emulate creating soldiers or vice versa, protect their children from needing to go off. I kind of just wanted to leave that vague because I don't think that, I think they were still playing around in the idea. They had only had one instance of it working.
Yes.
At that point.
Yes, that's right.
And that was Brianna. So yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, I was just going to say, I think it's cool that it's just kind of a generalized nefariousness and you can see that they're just kind of like, ooh, what can we do with these subjects? And that itself is kind of, is even worse because they have no regard for, they have this no goal. They're just like, oh, well, we've managed to do some good things with this. Let's just keep trying things with, you know, no regard to the consequences. Mm. And that just feels like really dangerous and irresponsible.
It's also that thing of like what you come up with in your head is far worse than it might actually be. So
Yeah.
Oh, look, my question to all of you is, what is your favorite moment from this season?
It's easy.
Oh, it's easy, is
easy.
It?
It's easy.
It's easy.
Like what a Sunday morning?
Sticky in a barrel. Come on, guys. Come on, guys. Sticky in a barrel.
Come on, it's obvious.
Which came from Chris, by the way.
It's sticky in a barrel.
Yeah.
Sticky in a barrel.
Came it's got to be Dicky Chris. In a barrel.
That was Chris's idea.
Why is that a surprise?
Dicky in a barrel.
And like the payoff when like Bill comes in the lift and we're all like, hi, and then he pops out of the barrel.
You come out of the barrel to say hi.
Oh, it's genius. I
should have, you know what I should have done? I should have just had Bill faint. That would have been very genre-like.
Yeah, it's pretty genre, yeah.
Double take and then faint. But I wanted the heartwarming stuff, so.
And too right.
Too bloody right, mate.
So that's my pick.
Yeah.
You can both pick the same moment.
No, honestly, it's my pick as
it's
well.
It's a great pick.
Dicky
in a barrel.
You know what? I think mine's the whole goddamn Vegemite debacle. Finding the Vegemite sandwich, stealing it, feeding it to Briel.
Yeah.
It actually cures Briel of shit.
I'm so glad that happened because in the book with the superpowered character, when it uses its powers, it uses up psychic energy. And if it goes disastrously or if it doesn't go right and they need to push it, then it causes them a bit of health. And we had that with the car and Briel exploding the cop's car. And I was wondering if you were going to help Briel recover in somehow, but it was kind of hard because obviously you need to keep going. You need to get to the mine. There's kind of no time to stop and rest. So finding the sandwich and having Briel eat it was just like my little eureka moment of, oh fuck, they can help Briel recover some psychic energy tokens. I actually,
with an Australian icon as well.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
My actual favorite moment, thinking about it, is definitely the confrontation between Keith and Eric. Because it's at that moment that I was like, motherfucker might be about to die. Like I thought, because you know, Kids on Bikes isn't exactly a death heavy system, but it is possible.
Mm.
And I thought, well, because I remember saying, he probably has a gun. And you guys like, he's not going to have a gun. And I was like, he has a gun.
Yeah.
And I was
he's like, oh, he's God. A cop. Of course he has a gun.
In and the country.
It was a very real moment. And it's that thing of like, Chris, your characterization of Eric is someone that will just do shit.
Yeah.
With no regard for his own health.
And he's, like, he's a bit of a kid with a death wish. And I was totally expecting Eric to die then.
I was shit scared. I'm not going to lie. I was very nervous because it's a big possibility that is hanging in the air, but then also where does that take the story? You know, obviously it would take it in an interesting way, as all kind of additions and yes endings do, but
well, how Jono
no more,
and Dickie
no more and after that if you well, can.
Yeah,
well,
that's
how
right.
Jono and Dickie would like now react when Keith comes down in the final moment, right?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like there's that extra like you killed our friend.
And we already that's the thing, we already know at that point that Keith is a very, very bad egg.
I was talking about this. We were joking about Phil swearing. You call Keith a cunt in episode 5,
yes,
I think.
Yes, that's right.
Like,
yeah.
You are outright like, he is a cunt and I hate him. In character, not just Phil.
What about your favorite moment, Ellen?
I have two. Can I do two?
Yeah,
I'm
going to
do two. Okay. I'm going to treat myself.
You're the DM,
I can have two
fine.
As a treat. So, Phil putting together.
Oh, yeah,
I can't get through it.
When Chris
Phil
gets shitty with us.
Kate's eye,
shitty, but...
which is encrusted with crystals, and Wooly's, the rumor of what Wooly's glass eye is, and the fact that Kate reveals that Wooly can see through her eye.
Yeah, Chris is the only one that got it. Early.
And Phil putting it together in such an excited way. No, like it was beautiful. Like you were so excited about it. And Chris, you were livid. And I was just.
Well, I remember because Phil
very...
said it, then I was like, oh, is that what it is? Yeah. And Chris was like, what?
I just felt very pleased because obviously that meant that the clues had merit.
Yes,
for
they
a large
did.
Like group, you know, so there would have been people who picked up on it early,
yeah,
who
yeah.
would have found
yes,
it still satisfactory. And there were people who put it together in that moment where it kind of all became very clear, and that just made me feel very chuffed as a storyteller.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, I'll change my favorite moment.
Okay,
my favorite moment was early in the cave when it was the three of us. I really enjoyed that moment.
Just
was
the when we're exploring the water or
no,
or
when we went back
when
in.
When we back oh, in.
Yeah. Or we waited around for everyone to go and we snuck in on our own.
That was a nice moment.
Yeah.
That
and was, everything was so confusing.
Yes.
And,
yes.
Is that top of the first hour in those kind of Stephen King books, right? When we're just first interacting with the mystery.
Yeah.
And it's very dark and mysterious.
Yeah, because it's just the characters against the world.
Yeah.
I enjoy that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that moment.
Almost went into the cave while Dickie was asleep.
Yeah, well, that was part of... That's why it stands out to me. It was so character-driven.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's a risk. I mean, in my play group, one character went into the mine without the other two, and I'm like, how the fuck am I going to bring this together? And then we could never get our schedules together. So that is unresolved, people.
Don't split the party, guys.
Yeah, don't split the party.
You're hurting your GM.
Split the party if one of you is willing to die.
Yeah. Only I can kill characters.
It was nice, though. They got that character got some nice intel. So I was kind of expecting a big kind of, we'll get together and... fill in the group. My second one is it's the instigating incident when Brianna goes missing.
Oh, yeah.
I was really pleased that you all were noticeably upset or reacting to the situation because speaking to my anxieties, this is a very tropey story. I mean, the character archetypes are called tropes, for God's sake.
Yeah.
But I think there was still a part of me that it's like, oh, but you know, they're going to know everything. Like, they're going to know all the mysteries and then it's not going to be a mystery down under. It's just going to be...
down under.
Yeah.
It's just going to be some cliches down under.
It's just going to be some cliches down under. But when Brianna goes missing, the shock that you all experience...
you got rid of my date.
And just the way that you all kind of flipped from a pretty jovial mood to then all... Now we're investigating. Now we're serious. Now we need to, you know, stop Dickie from jumping off into the rails into some murky cave water.
Yeah.
I really just appreciated how that went down.
It really felt like we kind of earned it by that point. By I think, you know, the kind of the preamble, the opening act, the exposition kind of section of the story is fairly long in this one compared to some other ones. But it's all so fun and it really sets the stage for our characters, such to the point where that incident does happen that it feels so much more satisfying for us all to change modes, right? And for us all to be like, oh, here's the other side of our characters. I think that's that. Those two things go hand in hand, I think. And I liked her disappearance because it was so... The environment that it happens in is very confusing and claustrophobic, and everyone has to sort of go in and go out and headcount. And to me, it was a very kind of effective way to have someone just kind of vanish, and think that's what made me respond to it so strongly.
Yeah.
I think if anyone's ever been cave exploring before, even in a touristy one, there is that very real fear that you could just, someone or could just kind of go off down a crevice or a crack or something and that's it, they're gone.
Yeah. I've gone caving before and it's...
Proper caving.
Yeah, yeah. Where you have to squeeze through. You know, my skin was getting ripped up and my clothes were getting ripped up because you had to, like, my head had to go sideways to get through caves and stuff like that. But I think there's something about playing young children, teenagers, where a scene that is not in your authority, right? You aren't, as player characters, you aren't necessarily the ones in control of the scene. There is someone who has greater authority than you, who is more powerful than you, who is more respected than you, adults in this case.
Mm.
They aren't sure what the answer is, and they're scared.
Mm.
And so if you've earned that power dynamic, then your characters are quite concerned and quite scared. It's like if the king receives, you're playing a D&D game or whatever, and the king receives some news and he's scared, you're like, oh fuck,
we need to be scared.
Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah. Especially that it's D, you know, who is the
up until this point
the expert
being,
on the cave,
being
and
very strong-willed and clear about what they understand, and they have a great deal of authority in this space.
Yeah.
Also, I know D and Brianna. All right. Maybe I can work on being better name. But also, I was talking to Sean about this. It is realistic to have a whole bunch of Australians.
Can we just
called
do a season where everyone has the same name? Because there are 20 Steves in the town.
But I was like, it is realistic in an Australian country town of that time period to have a whole bunch of Bills, Bobs, Bruce, that all Doug, that kind of that naming convention.
Yeah.
It's realistic, but that doesn't mean it's good. and it doesn't mean it's easy for people listening to it, even if you made the story.
Think of the listener.
So that's on me. I'll take that. I'll wear that and I will get better at naming.
I have a final question.
Yeah.
For Phil and Chris especially. Because I know both of you, I'm pretty sure, didn't reveal certain things that were on your sheet. And I know especially one of them is very... It's for Chris, because that's when Eric always touches the back of his neck. I'm wondering what those things are on your character sheet. They're the...
So mine was my fear. So I never told anyone my fear. So Jono's fear is getting sick. Because his mother died of a severe illness back in England, so he was very, very scared of getting sick and being catching something, essentially.
Right,
that was his deepest fear.
And that comes into play in the cave, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a little bit of worry that he'll get contaminated by something, and he's a little bit scared in that moment. Yeah, but it never came out to the forefront.
Oh god, especially because this was another thing that I learned from talking to my papa Bernie. In the town that he lived in, there was no doctor. They had a nurse in the other town that would kind of, you would go to if you had an emergency.
Yeah.
But for big issues, you were fucked. Like, that's it. You had a nurse in the other town.
What about
and the other town is still an hour away.
The Royal Flying Doctor Service?
This was the 70s.
And I when think he was, around
was
then.
And
what
when
was
he,
around?
Yeah. And it's, when hard, he was, it's still.
Yeah. But, and when he was growing up, like, you know, it was the 50s, it was the 40s, it was the 50s, you know, so like I wasn't able to talk to any of my dad's kind of generation, but I talked to my grandfather, since he would have had children growing up in that time. But yeah, it's, you were incredibly isolated, and the fear of, oh god, like if something terrible happened, you would just have to rely on your wits and the, you know, the rest of the town's kind of try and help you. Yeah, but yeah, that's yeah. So totally justifiable fear.
In mechanically in the game, if you face your fear, you have to spend adversity tokens to even attempt rolls in the But never kind of explicitly came up against that fear. And I kind of want, I don't think it's something Jono would talk about because it's how he lost his mum in the UK. This is why I wanted to keep it secret, just in case it did become a plot point.
Yeah.
In case that fear would be realized. I'm totally happy that it didn't. But yeah, that was the part that was hidden from about Jono. Yeah.
Chris?
Eric was just nervous. He was just a nervous,
it's just an
anxious
affectation. Yeah,
yeah.
It was, just a physical choice that I was like, how do I convey nervousness in moments where my character won't talk? I'll just rub the back of my neck.
It totally read for me. Are you saying that Eric doesn't have a tiny opal at the?
It's a secret tattoo.
Secret Breel.
Eric was Breel.
It's where his father controls him with a mind control chip or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then he has to fight. Yeah.
Season two, baby.
Yeah. He's a punch hole through
honestly,
the moon.
He was just a nervous guy who was scared of his dad wanted to run away from the town.
Yeah. I hated playing your dad. I hated playing a lot of the authority figures, except for Bill Woolley, because I based him on a person that we know.
I enjoyed you playing that sort of character.
I relished it from an acting standpoint, but there was a part of me that just felt sick to my stomach because, controversially, I don't like seeing kids in a distress. I know, call me a bad guy.
Both my floor and what's the other one?
You have your floor... You have a fear. All characters have a fear. Am I correct? It's been a while since I've played the game.
You have traits, fears, and flaws.
Yes.
You have fears, hobbies, flaws, and then description.
Yeah. So all of that I made explicitly known. So I didn't keep anything. But I had an Easter egg that Ellen knew about from creation. And I honestly thought the two of you would pick up on it immediately. But no one has, and no one...
And it's been driving Sean insane ever since.
None of the listeners has either.
But that's all we have time for, so I'm afraid.
So, do you want to say it was an interview and...
His last name, Dickie Morse.
Yeah,
We've talked about this. It links to your character.
We've never talked about this before.
I'm sure you've mentioned it.
Yeah, we've chatted about it off mic.
Yeah, I've never mentioned to anyone except Ellen.
I think maybe you and I
talked about it.
We were it's Detective Morse.
Oh, yeah, maybe we talked. I think Chris and I must have talked about
it. It's basically Jess is Kevin's mother.
It's not who you'd think. Because when Sean first pitched me the idea.
I crunched the numbers.
Yeah.
And originally it was going to be Dickie. I was, no, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think at some point we tweaked on the surname. I was like, I bet he's linked them in some way.
Yeah.
So we didn't know explicitly the link. But
it's a Rolltecast legacy character.
Yeah.
For the first time. Basically, the events of Kids on Bikes puts Jess on the straight and narrow. She saw some shit and wants to... and. Goes to start protecting people after that.
She can't smoke a cigar anymore.
Which means more awareness in the world of darkness. And there's vampires and werewolves in the town or wherever.
I think that works, though. Yeah. Wara Wirin has been known to have interdimensional creatures in
a spirit world. There's an abyss. Yeah. I can make that work.
How much weirder could vampires and werewolves be, honestly?
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Vampires, yes, but Breel?
That's a mage setting waiting to happen.
An opal leviathan from the mirror dimension.
Yeah, I can make that happen.
You're free to use any notes that you wish,
just
Chris.
Just smash the mechanics
happen.
Of vampire and KOB
Why
together.
Why not? Two good tastes that taste great together, you know?
No.
Shout out to opals. Opals are great.
Opals are
great. Can we just give a quick shout out to opals? Thanks, everyone.
Shout out to opals, guys.
We are not sponsored by Opal, but
Smilers
we would love
in the
to
chat.
Be.
Hashtag opals. Get them while they're hot.
There's a very Australian thing.
Decidedly Australian.
Went up to Cooba Pedy not that long ago, this big opal mining town. But yeah, they're beautiful stones and the way that you can opalize things. And yeah, it was just rife for opportunities.
Mm. In our other role-playing game, we're using opals as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you and I are more similar than we like to admit, Chris.
Yeah, I know. We're two versions of the same coin.
Yeah.
You're the dark macabre light one and I'm the dark macabre
dark one.
There you go. You're happy to talk about murder podcasts.
Yes.
I'm sad to talk about murder.
Spoopy and spooky.
Yeah.
Oh, that's perfect.
There you go.
Which one's which?
That's
You'll never know.
That needs to be a t-shirt.
So I feel like we're slowly coming to the conclusion of this episode.
Yes.
Is there anything else, Ellen, you'd like to talk about in terms of KB before we have a bit of a reveal of what's happening next season?
A breveal? I tried.
No, I don't think so. I just would like to, again, thank you all so much for not... You know, say bearing with me, that sounds quite negative, but for supporting me.
Yeah, there you go.
For my first proper time finishing a game as a GM and doing it live. You were all incredibly wonderful players, and your additions and your advice really did help. And I'm looking forward to kind of learning and growing even more. So
it's kind of a testament to what people are saying online. It doesn't seem like your first time GMing whatsoever.
Really? Yeah. I do resolve to it's better to not say anything and use the time to think than say kinda, because I'm fucking sick of myself saying it's kind of because that's just me buying time to think.
It's the nature of the beast. Listen to yourself talk regularly.
We've
just
all
like,
got our
what?
Things. Yeah.
But well done, that, honestly.
Yeah, no,
sincerely, well done.
Congratulations.
Awesome
congratulations.
Thank
very
you.
Good.
So that's all I'd like to say, and I would like to hand it over to...
Okay, so Ellen, you're fired. Phil, you've got the job. What are you doing now as the GM for us next season?
So yes, I'm doing my third season for Roll to Cast. I've been given the nod by my colleagues here, and very shortly you'll see us tackle The Witcher TTRPG. That is, again, by Artel Saurian Games.
Friends of the pod.
Friends of the pod.
By Pondsmith and Pondsmith. So we're doing a little adventure of my devising called The Blood-Soaked Rose. It was a time. So we have already recorded it at this stage. I had a lot of horrible fun doing it.
we don't want to say too much.
Yeah,
I think it's just different.
It's different from this season.
A nice teaser would be it's definitely our darkest season yet.
Yes. That's a good way of saying
definitely
it.
Definitely our darkest. I would wager it's our darkest yet.
I think so. Yeah.
I would comfortably say, as someone who loves dark games... It's our darkest yet.
Yeah, very well told. And it's going to be quite a jump from
KOB.
Yes. From
yes.
Kids on Bikes.
Certainly is. So Kids on Bikes by Renegade Game Studios.
Yes.
That's correct.
Very, very good. Next week we're talking to...
Doug Lewandowski and Jonathan Gilmer. Oh my God, it's Jonathan Gilmer. I think we made that joke in the interview as well. God damn it.
They appreciated it both times.
Yes. Doug Lewandowski and Jonathan Gilmore, who created the game together, two amazing freelance game designers and creators, and also a high school English teacher in Doug's case.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So look forward to that next week where we'll be interviewing the creators of Kids on Bike as a nice bow to finish up the present that was Kids on Bikes for you this season. And then the week after that, we jump right into episode 0 for our season of The Witcher, The Blood-Soaked Rose.
The Blood-Soaked Rose.
No rest for the wicked, right?
Yeah. And so until next week, I've been Sean.
I've been Chris.
I've been Phil.
And I am Ellen.
Oh, bye everyone.
Bye. Goodbye.
Oh, gee, bye mate.
Real says goodbye as well.
You have been listening to Mystery Down Under, which is a Roll to Cast production. The best way to find us is on Twitter, Discord, and our Patreon. All our podcasts are on Acast, Spotify, YouTube, and all good podcatchers. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rolltocast. Kids on Bikes and all associated properties are trademark of Renegade Game Studios. Used with permission.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50.
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.